From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the U.S. Senate passed a $716 billion defense policy bill on Wednesday, backing President Trump's call for a bigger, stronger military. And Turkey demands removal of sanctions over Pastor Andrew Brunson. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina will be here in just a moment. Also today, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, their Office of Population Affairs announced the 96 grantees to whom HHS intends to award the Title X Family Planning Grants for the fiscal year 2018. 12 of the intended awardees go to grantees who are new to Title X, but some of the funds will go to Planned Parenthood. Why? We'll talk about it with Dr. Diane Foley, Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Population Affairs at HHS. And apparently, the ACLU has seen the light, kind of. The ACLU filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration arguing that immigrants held by ICE are being denied their religious freedom rights under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. While it's unlikely you'll see the ACLU and FRC holding a joint press conference anytime soon, we will talk about the case and its implications for religious freedom with FRC's religious liberty attorney and vice president of policy, Travis Weber. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, let me remind you of the new tool for the Activist Toolkit, the Stand Firm app. Gives you notifications of action items that you can take right there where you live, oftentimes tailored for your member of Congress based upon what's happening. Also gives you daily notification when it's time for Washington Watch. To download it, go to TonyPerkins.com or just go to the App Store, Stand Firm app. All right, believe it or not, the Senate is moving faster than the House in approving appropriations bills. Now, some people may say that there's a hot place freezing over, but I don't think it's that bad yet. As of yesterday, the Senate had passed 7 of the 12 annual spending bills. The House has just passed 6. The Senate also approved the final version of the National Defense Authorization Act, which will continue the progress of that's been achieved in the last couple of years of rebuilding the capacity, capabilities, and readiness of the U.S. military, hollowed out during the Obama years. The measure also restricts the sale of F-35 fighter jets to Turkey, a country who continues to hold Pastor Andrew Brunson, a native of North Carolina. With us now is Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, also a retired member of the United States Air Force. Senator Graham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, can you believe the Senate is so efficient?
Well, it is a new day. I mean, you're ahead of the House in appropriations bills.
So Mitch McConnell and Shelby and... Yeah, we are trying to get back in the appropriations business. I think the president was right to scold us for sending him this one big giant spending bill. And, you know, we're getting back to a traditional way of doing business, passing the 12 bills, as many as we can, separately, so you know what's in them and we can have better oversight of the government. So Senator McConnell and Shelby are doing a good job.
Well, you mentioned the president's putting the pressure because I think members of the Senate
that helped a lot
understand that he means business.
Yeah, I don't blame him one bit. You know, it's we haven't really done the appropriations process in like 30 years. So I think we can get up to 9 of the 12 bills done, and that would be good government. You'll know what's in it. But the National Defense Authorization Act, named after John McCain, is $717 billion. 24,000 more men and women in the military. We need more people because the threats are greater. More equipment, more planes, more ships, more tanks, more training, and the largest pay raise for our military in almost a decade. So appreciate President Trump helping us there.
Well, and just a little bit of trivia here. The financial services bill, which is a part of a reorganization that took place, this is the first time the Senate's passed that since the reorganization back in 2007. So, I mean, this is kind of a new day for the Senate.
We're doing what people expect us to do, which is, you know, our Democratic friends have finally actually worked with us a bit. You know, we're having to do things they want us to do, and they're having to do a lot of things we want them to do, and we're getting these bills cranked out. And, you know, from a spending point of view, we're spending at 2010 levels on the non-defense budget, and we're finally getting the military budget, you know, it was hollowed out. We're trying to restore it. So it's all good, and we're going to have a Supreme Court justice, another one on the court, I think, by the middle of October. That'd be good, too.
So you do think it will happen before the election?
Yeah, I'm you know, unless there's some bombshell out there, yes. I mean, we're giving them almost a million documents. The most anyone's ever been provided was 170,000 in Kagan's case. Kavanaugh's got 306 opinions to look at. So, you know, there'll always be one more document they want. They're all going to vote no, except the Democrats are in seats, whereas to their political advantage to vote yes. He's highly qualified, one of the most qualified conservative justices in the country, well done by President Trump. And unfortunately, we're down to the point in time where people vote on Supreme Court nominations based on base politics more than qualification.
Yes, without question. I agree with you. I do think that it'll be hard to oppose him. I think he will
be impossible if you're in a red state Democrat. You oppose this guy at your own peril. He's more qualified than Sotomayor and Kagan in terms of time on the bench, and he's really a gifted person. I mean, he's just a good guy. You'd want him to be your neighbor, not just on the Supreme Court. He's a conservative icon in terms of thought, so that's all good.
And you've sat down and spoken with him?
A lot. I told him, get ready. It's nothing about you. They're going to try to come after you every way they can. We're going to be there to help you. I'm not hiding the fact that I'm going to vote for him. I like the list submitted by the president to the voters before the election. You know, the one thing it said about President Trump, he's keeping his promises. He put a list out there before the election, so people had a chance to understand where he was coming from, and he won.
Let's talk about keeping those promises. One of the promises he made was to defend religious freedom, and I believe he has been doing that both domestically and from a foreign policy standpoint. And I know this is an issue that you care about. I testified before your committee
on
the religious freedom issue. Last week, the Secretary of State holding the first ever ministerial to advance religious freedom. We've got an American being held now for close to 2 years in Turkey. There were some restrictions in the defense authorization bill, which is on its way to the president, restricts the sale of the fighter jets. Now, I know that also relates to buying of military hardware from Russia. But the Senate has taken a bipartisan stand that Turkey needs to let him go.
Well, let's just say James Lankford's been a terrific voice for Pastor Brunson. Senator Tillis from North Carolina, I went over. I met with Erdogan about 3-4 weeks ago now. And I said, listen, you're a NATO ally. We got to get this behind us. Pastor Brunson, I saw him in jail in Izmir. And a couple weeks later, they let him out. He's at home now, but he's not in America. But he's at his home in Izmir, Turkey. And I appreciate that step. But he's a wonderful man, committed to his faith. He was a pastor of a church of about 50 to 60 people. He no more wanted to overthrow the government of Turkey, you know, than I could be in the NBA. So this has just been, got caught up in something not of his making. He's been in jail way too long. He is not a enemy of the Turkish people or the state of Turkey. And it's just unfortunate that this has happened. But I remain optimistic. President Trump has had several talks. I talked to the ambassador this morning, and I said, we've got to get this issue behind us. The S-400, buying a Russian air defense system, is not being a good NATO member. We're not going to give you the F-35 and let the Russians see how the F-35 deals with the S-400. And so we got problems with Turkey, but I'm trying to push forward and maybe one day a free trade agreement. But I want to tell you listeners who have prayed dutifully and passionately on behalf of Pastor Brunson, we're going to get a good outcome sooner rather than later.
So let me ask you, Senator Graham, in your meeting with the Turkish President Erdogan, what was your sense? Is he reasonable?
Yes, for the first time. I met this guy like 5 times, and you get a lecture about the world, but he just won. He's the dog who caught the car. The Turkish economy is now in the tank. They need a free trade agreement with the United States. I'd like to pull them away from Russia and Iran into our orbit. But I said, there are two things, Mr. President, we got to get behind us. Pastor Brunson and embassy personnel, not just Pastor Brunson. There's 7 or 8 Americans that were caught up in this. But what your listeners need to understand, 2 years ago, his military turned on him, and they actually bombed the parliament. So he's a pretty paranoid guy. He's gone too far, and Pastor Brunson is not an enemy of the Turkish people. He's not a Gulen supporter, and we made it real clear that none of us bought the idea that he's legitimately being held. And the last thing the Turkish president said to me is that we need to get this behind us. I thought we were there. Then something happened with the sanctions, and I'm afraid we're going back into a dark space now. But Pompeo has been terrific. He's going to meet with the Turkish foreign minister tomorrow in Singapore. I'm going to meet with President Trump Sunday, and we're going to see if we can find a way to get this behind us without taking the economies in a bad direction.
Let me ask you, Senator Graham, about that NATO relationship. I mean,
yes.
Turkey now cozying up to Russia.
Yep.
I mean, they're moving more toward a hardline Islamist government. Is that NATO alliance at risk?
Well, here's the way I look at it. It's the only Muslim country in NATO. Turkey has developed their economy pretty substantially. I've been going to Turkey for over 30 years. I was stationed in Turkey for a while when I was in the Air Force. And the economic prosperity in Turkey is being felt by the average Turk compared to the average Russian and Putin. Putin's Russia, he's stolen blind. Erdogan has gotten very much conservative when it comes to religion. He's cracking down on dissent and the independent media. But having said that, he is a NATO ally, and he told me without hesitation that he understands the best hope for his country to grow and prosper is to be aligned with the West, to be a contrarian, but also to be aligned with the West. He doesn't want ISIS to come back. He doesn't want Iran to dominate Syria. And let me tell you, if I'm Turkey, I'm a little upset with America, too. What did we do on Obama's watch? We allowed the entire country to be dismembered by the Iranians, a mortal enemy of everybody in the region, 500,000 Syrians killed, and we wound up arming some folks in the eyes of Turkey is more dangerous than ISIS. So we got to recalibrate. Northeastern Syria, we got a good foothold. The Kurds have been helpful, but we got to assure Turkey that we're not going to allow northeastern Syria to become a safe haven for PKK types.
It does go both ways.
It goes both ways, and Erdogan's not beyond turning around here, but I worry. But Pompeo has been a champion on religious liberty.
Right.
You have to. You and Jay Sekulow, that hearing we had, and you're going to be surprised pleasantly, I think, about the money we're putting in the State Department budget to help religious minorities. We've heard your message, Tony. We've heard your plea, and I think we're reacting appropriately.
Well, thank you for coming on today, Senator, and thank you for taking up the calls or keeping up the calls of Pastor Brunson and religious
freedom. Yeah,
keep praying,
and I'm hopeful, but we're not going to let this go.
All right. Thanks so much. Senator Lindsey Graham, thanks for joining us. All right, folks, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Continue to pray for Pastor Brunson. I did talk to the Secretary of State earlier this week about the case, and this is a focal point. The administration is focusing very intently on it. The Secretary of State's taking the lead, but we need to continue to pray. All right, coming up next, $286 million going to Title X funding, but some of it's going to Planned Parenthood. Why? We're going to talk about it next. Don't go away.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you, get the Stand Firm app. It is the latest tool for your activist toolkit. You go to tonyperkins.com, follow the links over, or go to the App Store, Stand Firm. Okay, the Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, as we often refer to it here in the district, oversees the allocation of about $286 million allocated by Congress in what is called Title X Family Planning. Now, this is monies that's given out to different organizations to pursue family planning. Okay, a couple of months ago, HHS announced the introduction of new rules that would prohibit an organization that performs abortions from doing family planning if it's in the same facility. So otherwise, it's what's called the co-location rule, that if you're going to do family planning and get federal dollars, you can't do it where you do abortions, okay? Now, those rules have not yet been adopted. They've been put out there for public comment, and so they're not yet in place. Therefore, among the 96 grant recipients announced earlier today, there were 13 Planned Parenthood clinics getting some of the money. Here to explain what's happening is Dr. Diane Foley. She is the Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Population Affairs. Dr. Foley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Mr. Perkins. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Did I set that up appropriately? That's the rules that are put out there that the administration announced, no more of this, funding organizations that do abortion. Those rules have not yet been adopted. So as a result, this batch of grants that have been issued are having to operate according to the old rules, which allows organizations like Planned Parenthood to get the funding. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So when will we see a change?
Well, again, you mentioned before that the rule is a proposed rule, and the comment period just ended on Tuesday. And so we are looking to go through those comments. There are a lot of them. And then based on that, we'll write a new rule. And really, we don't know what that new rule will look like exactly at this point.
Mm-hmm. So this is, you're required to do this. This is what the law that's put in place regarding regulations and rules that an agency would promulgate. You have to go through this process, read through the comments, and then pursue the final rule. Is that correct?
That's exactly right.
So it's not like you can just come in and rewrite it however you want. There is a process that you have to go by.
Right, and there also the process takes some time as well, and I think that's one of the misconceptions that has been out in the, I think, in the public and through the media that, again, that was announced by HHS and by President Trump, and then all of a sudden it went into effect. But it will take some time, and we don't know what that final rule will be or what it will exactly look like. And I think the thing that's important to understand is that the statute, Title 10 statute, that has been in place since 1970 already prohibits funds from being used in programs where abortion is a method of family planning. That is not a new rule. What is proposed to be different is that rather than having to maintain, right now there needs to be a clear financial separation between any funds that come in for Title 10 services and the abortion funds as well. The difference that is being proposed, at least in the new rule, is that there will also be a physical separation.
Right, and which is, by the way, is not new. I mean, that goes back to the Reagan years when that was in place.
That's right.
It's what was referred to as the co-location, meaning that, look, I know the books keep separate numbers, but if you're under the same roof, you can, you know, you can get the overhead can be covered by it, and just make it a very clear cut, a line of separation, so that we know without a shadow of a doubt that taxpayer funds are not going in any form or fashion to subsidize abortion.
That's right. And again, as you know, it's very difficult to track the financial funds. It's very difficult to keep track of that. And so you're right.
Right.
It makes
right.
it much more right.
And that actually, as I recall correctly, was litigated when during the Reagan years, and the court upheld the right of the government to do that.
That is exactly right. It was actually a Supreme Court, the Supreme Court that actually upheld that during that time.
Right. Can't get much higher than that.
Nope.
So it's not like you're trying to chart new territory. It's simply returning back to what we had before we had some administrations that, in my view, were radically pro-abortion. So I think this is just more of this administration keeping their promises to separate or to end this forced partnership between taxpayers and abortion organizations. So any idea, Dr. Foley, the time frame in which we might see these new rules?
We really don't, no. There are a lot of comments to go through, and there really isn't any idea.
Okay. Well, I want to let you get back to reading those comments so this process, we can move this process along. But I do thank you for coming on today because, you know, look, this city is not like a drive-through fast food restaurant where you can order it and you turn the corner and it's there. It does take time to get these things accomplished. And I know that from my vantage point, Health and Human Services is doing a stellar job of trying to carry forth the type of policies that this president and administration promised to the American people.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your support.
All right, Dr. Diane Foley. You know, in a day of where things are instant, you know, microwaves, fast food, you really don't want policy to be that quick. In fact, that was part of the last administration. They cut a lot of corners and did stuff unilaterally, and I think stretched the rules, if not broke the rules. One of the things, while we want an outcome, we do want to abide by the law and the rules. And so while I would like to see this thing accomplished more quickly and this forced partnership between taxpayers and abortion entities like Planned Parenthood ended, I know where the administration, where they're moving and how they're doing it methodically, legally. So they're on the right track. They're trying to do the right thing. Although today's announcement that 13 Planned Parenthood clinics are getting Title 10 funding is disappointing, it's just for a season. All right, when we come back, the ACLU concerned about religious freedom under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. We're going to talk about it with Travis Weber here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Back with more after this.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, make your smartphone a little smarter. Get the Stand Firm app. Go to tonyperkins.com, follow links over, or go to the App Store, Stand Firm. It will give you all the tools you need to be a participant in this great republic of ours. All right, the ACLU, their Prison Law Office and Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center, alleged in a lawsuit against the Trump administration that illegal immigrants being held in California's federal prison are being denied their constitutional rights under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The ACLU suing the Trump administration for denying religious freedom rights. Now, I don't know. Has the ACLU seen the light? Well, here to talk about it, Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President of Policy and our Religious Liberty Attorney. All right, Travis, as the ACLU, are they out there, we've seen the light? Are they singing that song?
Tony, I wish it to be so. I'm not sure it's the case. I'm happy they're bringing a RFRA claim to vindicate the rights allegedly violated of those being detained here, you know, and things like that we most people would agree on when allowed into a common area and to live in that common area. If people are being prevented from studying the Bible, from having Bibles, you know, these are things that we would say, look, we need to protect religious freedom within those reasonable bounds. I'm not sure the ACLU has seen the light for a host of reasons, but I'm glad to see them resorting to a religious freedom claim in this case, at least.
Well, in all seriousness, what are the implications of that? The fact that the ACLU appealing to the courts based upon the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which, by the way, for our listeners' benefit, This is the same provision that has been appealed to all the way to the Supreme Court when it pertains to bakers and florists and photographers here in the United States, legal American citizens. And so to have the ACLU raising this religious freedom claim, to me, I think is quite significant.
It's very significant, especially when you look at an op-ed by the deputy legal director of the ACLU from several years ago saying, we can no longer support RFRA because we don't like how it conflicts with our other policy priorities. It's very significant that they're still raising this RFRA claim. Now, the ACLU is in a crisis of sorts in which there are various policies the organization wants to advance, and it has to pick and choose what's going to come out on top. Unfortunately, in many cases now, its vision of social conformity under the guise of equality comes out on top, and that results in discrimination against Christians with religious freedom claims. You know, this case, we'll have to see what happens, but this really exposes the internal divide and exposes what happens when you do not have a coherent worldview from which you're operating. You ultimately pick and choose competing priorities.
Well, could it also be that, I mean, the trends that we see taking place, which we've been a part of driving, is an understanding, number one, that religious liberty is at risk, and number two, that there is broad public support being built for the defense of religious freedom?
I hope so, and I hope the ACLU gets on board with it. You know, unfortunately, the evidence of that organization's approach to the issue is a bit more off-putting. You know, several years ago, the organization also sided with a ROTC cadet, a Sikh cadet's religious freedom claim. But at the same time, that same organization is suing Michigan for trying to protect religious freedom of adoption of riders. Very here and there approach to religious freedom, very ad hoc, and ultimately very arbitrary in how the organization approaches the issue. Funny that the claim is often made our direction that we only care about our own religious freedom. To the contrary, we're happy to support the religious freedom from all when you look at that issue as a policy matter. So, you know, the fact that the ACLU is bringing this claim here is significant. I don't know exactly how this originated, how it came about. I hope that this points toward a more widespread recognition of the importance of religious freedom in our society for all people. And you can do that consistent with an orderly immigration system, with an orderly constitutional structure, as we've talked about. So this is something the ACLU used to agree on with more people. It's only recently that as they've picked other policy priorities they're pushing, they've departed from their once more consistent vision of religious freedom.
Well, they were actually a part of the coalition that supported RFRA 20-some years ago.
They used to support RFRA, and then when they realized, whoa, we don't like how it's being used to interfere with our policy priorities, they decided, we can't support it anymore. Okay, fine. But don't go around saying you're defending religious freedom rights. You're defending the constitutional rights of all people, as they often claim.
Now, a lot of that conflict that they saw is with the LGBT agenda issues.
Yeah, as they frame it, you know, they're working to advance the priorities of equality. But what happens is you're picking what's on top and you're rejecting the Christians' religious freedom claim and ultimately discriminating against them.
Okay, Travis, don't go anywhere because I want to – I got one more question for you. I want you to explain, you know, what actually these detainees are being denied so folks will know what the ACLU is suing about. And then we're going to take your phone calls, folks. I'm actually going to be out next week, taking a little time with the family, kind of detoxing from the political environment. What are your plans for the summer? So we're going to kind of going to deviate here from the political and talk the practical. What's your family doing for fun this summer? All right, we're going to talk about it on Washington Watch. When we return, we'll wrap up with Travis and go to your phone call. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You can talk about the topics we've been talking about today. Talk about the ACLU seeing the light in filing suit against the Trump administration for violating the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or the rights guaranteed under that act to illegal immigrants. We can talk about that. We can talk about Pastor Brunson, what's happening here in Washington, or, as I said, I'm going to be out next week taking some time just to kind of get away from the political. And, you know, what do you do for fun in the summer? What family plans do you have? You already had your vacation. You got one coming up. We can talk about that. But first, I want to wrap up my conversation. Again, that phone number, 866-372-7234, kind of an open line here Thursday. Travis Weber, Vice President of Public Policy here. All right, Travis, we were talking about the types of activities that the ACLU is saying that these detainees are being denied.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tony, I'm looking through the complaint right now that the ACLU filed, and I'm just going to read one sentence out of it. It says, detainee Cortez attempted to hold a Bible study group with about 15 other detainees in a common area of his building. They were told by an officer to stop praying. They did not have the right to assemble and pray. Separately, another detainee Bible was taken away or told there weren't any Bibles and he couldn't have a Bible in his possession, couldn't be returned to him. So among other allegations, these are allegations in the complaint. We have to see what happens. But if this is occurring consistent with the policies and order, the ability to keep order in this facility, we would obviously want to see these people be able to practice their faith. Absolutely.
Right. Well, here's something that I think will cause the ACLU probably to fall out of their chair. I'm going to communicate with the Attorney General Jeff Sessions and ask him to look into this, saying that we support the right of these detainees, and I'm sure he would too. I would think to be able to have Scripture if they want to meet and have and obviously you got to take in. I've worked in a prison, so I understand the security issues there. As long as it's if inmates or detainees are allowed to meet for some other purpose, they should be able to meet for religious purposes, to pray, have a service or whatever.
Absolutely. You know, and there's other claims here, a Sikh claim too, and some other claims. And, you know, we'll just point out that the Holt versus Hobbs case that reached the Supreme Court several years ago involved a Muslim prisoner and a beard. And the president was trying to make him shave it. And ultimately, the Supreme Court said under RLUIPA, which is the RFRA standard, said, okay, we understand you have interest in security in the prison, but you had exempted others from the beard requirement, allowed them to have a beard. If you're exempting them for a non-religious reason, you have to allow this guy to have a religious reason for his actions. And so there are reasonable approaches to this, consistent with order and security. You can have religious freedom. There's no reason people to be having their Bibles confiscated, other reasonable religious claims being permitted. Absolutely. And I'm glad to see that the ACLU is raising these claims here.
I think it's a new day. It is encouraging, and I think when you have the ACLU advocating for religious freedom, maybe the First Amendment is experiencing a revival.
I hope it to be so, and let us encourage them to continue to do so.
All right. Travis Weber, as always, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, 866-372-7234. We're going to go to the phone lines and take your calls. Let's go to Miller in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Miller, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello there, my friend. I wanted to ask you if you know anything more about the conversation you were having with the doctor about separating facilities of Planned Parenthood and other families. Health facilities that may be in the same building or whatever, I don't know, so that the taxpayers are not paying for that. And
right.
My question really is, do you have any knowledge whether what's going on with the federal funding of Planned Parenthood for multiple millions, which really ought to go to the wall? But anyway, do you know anything about the status of that? Because that's what I really want to president and them to do away with, is funding of Planned Parenthood.
I do. That is actually there have been ongoing discussions since it came within one vote in the reconciliation bill last year. And it was John McCain who voted against the reconciliation, which would have essentially killed Obamacare, would have put into a new form fashion. And it would have defunded Planned Parenthood. He voted against that, and there it failed in the Senate by that one vote. Now, that said, the effort continues. I have frequent conversations with Steve Scalise, the majority whip from Louisiana. And even in this second iteration of the tax reform bill, there's some discussions about maybe trying to get that again. So there's still it's not a dead issue. We're still looking through the appropriations bills to get it on there. The problem with the regular appropriations bills, the labor and human service, I forget all the names that are on that one appropriations bill, that would require 60 votes in the Senate. So the most likely way to get this accomplished is another reconciliation bill, which will come in time. So Miller, it is not, they haven't given up on it. But I do think that the American people have to keep the pressure on Congress. And during this August break and an election year, there are going to be many members of Congress that are going to be doing public events, town halls, out meeting people. This is one question to ask. When are you going to end this forced partnership between us and organizations like Planned Parenthood? $500 million a year going to the nation's largest abortion clinic needs to stop. So that's the message. So, Miller, thanks so much for the call. So, folks, you're going to have that opportunity, and no doubt you're going to run across members of Congress who are campaigning and ask them point blank, when are you going to stop this forced partnership between Planned Parenthood and the American taxpayer? All right, let's go to TJ in Missouri. TJ, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. I got a question and a comment. My comment first
go right ahead.
Is, I love the ACLU finally back in the religious freedom, but is it more because they're illegal immigrants and it's the Trump administration? Would they do the same if this was white people in a school? That's my comment on that. And then my question is, the way I see the three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, this is a follow-up to yesterday. The judicial interprets the legislative laws, but it's the executive branch that actually enforces that judicial ruling. So if the Trump administration, if the judicial branch rules against him, can't he just tell the executive branch all his FBI and stuff, just not enforce it?
Technically, yes, I think that is the case. However, as a as we interpret the court's interpretation of the law as being the from an operational sense, what the law is. Now, that can be changed. The Congress can come back and change it. What we don't want to do is we don't want to go down the path that I think we were far down with Obama, the lawlessness, where they just did whatever they wanted. But I still got Travis here in the studio. I'll let Travis weigh in on that as well.
Sure. So I think, thank the caller for the question. You know, I think the way to think about these things at the big picture level is to remember that the framers designed the Constitution to separate power. They wanted power in those three different branches. They expected the branches to, in essence, push back on each other at times. Things get out of balance and don't work when one or more branches refuses to push back and one or more of the other branches grabs a lot of power, right? So when we think through these constitutional issues, I'm speaking generally, we need to remember that's how they designed the Constitution. It works properly. We have a healthy nation when you have this power pushing back between the branches, because that
right.
spreads it out, prevents any one person from grabbing it.
Yeah, there's a natural tension that was designed in our system that's there. TJ, thanks so much for listening, and I appreciate the call. And to your first comment, I don't disagree with you. I do think the ACLU is focused on this because if this were the Obama administration, I don't think they would bring the suit. However, the important aspect of this that Travis and I were talking about is that they are using RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, as the basis to say that you know, these detainees are being denied a Bible, which is a recognition of the validity of the law. So that when – and this is, as I said, this has been the basis for many of the domestic religious freedom cases that have been put forth. So they're going to have a hard time being, I think, consistent – arguing that the law is valid and then at the same time that it's not valid. So it's I think it's a positive development. All right, let's go to Jenny, who is also in Missouri. Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call. I had kind of a similar question regarding the ACLU's activities. If illegal aliens are not protected by the Constitution, do you think perhaps this is an ACLU end around using RFRA to establish that illegal aliens can be considered as protected under our Constitution?
Travis, go ahead. Jump in on that one.
Yeah, so Jenny, thanks for the question. You know, when we think about who comes under the protection of the Constitution, you know, this is one of these areas where people look at lawyers and they get into the weeds, get into details, and they don't like it. But the reality is that the Constitution protects people who generally are on the within the controlled territory jurisdiction of the U.S., even if they're here illegally. Now, that being said, immigration law and how constitutional rights apply to people in different scenarios does depend on the status. If they show up at our border and demand to be entered into the U.S., they don't automatically have constitutional rights. And so if we detain them, hold them in our custody in a civilized way, you know, which many nations around the world do not do, and we decide how, you know, if they're going to return to where they're from or something else, when we do that, that doesn't mean they automatically have all constitutional rights. So to answer your question, you know, this is something where we have to look at the rights that currently apply and work with the laws we have, even if they're not ideal. But we're really focused on the religious freedom aspect here, and that's a good thing.
But to Jenny's
right.
point.
And I would hope that it would just be a policy adjustment that would let these people have their Bible
right.
and not
Which I think,
a lawsuit.
Yeah. yeah, and I'm not sure why it's not, because this administration that has been supportive of religious liberty, I don't know why they wouldn't do this. But to Jenny's point, I think it's a valid concern. We saw this in a recent case that was actually involved Kavanaugh on the district court with the underage, the minor illegal immigrant that came to the country that was pregnant and wanted an abortion. And there were those saying that, and he did not say this, but there were others on the court saying that she had a constitutional right to an abortion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not clearly established by law. So to the caller's point, you know, just because you show up here and demand the protection of the Constitution does not automatically mean you have it. That being said, we've treated people as a civilized nation in a manner in which we try to give them legal protections in circumstances, even when they're not a full citizen.
Right.
But the court in the abortion case, the Garza case, which Tony mentioned, got way out of hand, way out of step with the law, and it was not the law, and it kind of got ahead of itself.
And this really is more of a policy, because the policy of access to religious materials and religious services would be the same in an institution, whether one is illegally here or not. So it is interesting, and there's more layers to this, and we'll continue to uncover it. Let's try to work in one more phone call here. Let's go to Leslie in Louisiana. Leslie, very quickly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you, and I will make it quick. I think this might not be. I don't know. I don't think I would argue this. I'm not a lawyer, but this is very troubling to me as well as to Jenny, I understand. I don't think we as conservatives want to make a Faustian bargain with the ACLU and start establishing that people in the country illegally have civil rights, period. I think this is absolutely the wrong move. I think it's very troubling. I don't think anything good is going to come out of this, because yeah. we're going to start setting precedents that illegal aliens, refugees, people, we can't. This whole thing is out of control, and now we're tacitly acknowledging as conservatives that people, for whatever reason, whoever you are, you happen to get over that line, now you have full rights and liberties. I think it's absolutely the wrong way to go, and I understand the religious freedom aspect, of course.
Right.
But I don't think this is going to end well, and I hope I'm wrong.
Well, Leslie, I completely understand your point, and let me make very clear what we're saying here. We're not saying that anyone who comes here illegally automatically has rights, even if they're the religious freedom rights. But what we're pointing out here is that the ACLU, it's just odd, interesting, intriguing that they are arguing for religious freedom rights when at the yeah. same time, as Travis just mentioned 2 years ago, they said they can't support the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which they helped get passed. So just, it's more of an observation, but I completely understand your concern. And I think we share the concern of wondering what's up here. But the fact that the ACLU appealing to RFRA, hey, things are happening. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, download the app. And then, as the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, well, just stand firm.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.